Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Avington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the War Report. If you saw our promo for today's show, you should have seen a little video statement saying, "This is a show we never, ever, never thought we would be doing." And I wasn't going to do this show even as early as last Tuesday night, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I just made the decision not too long ago, 48 hours ago or something like that, that I should say something and what it is I possibly should say on this. We're going to go back to the series that we were halfway into on the question of cultural racism and how, if any way, it makes its way into the classroom. That was one reason why I was unsure as to what I should do, because I wanted to stay with that subject, and I will go back to that subject probably next week. One note about last week. No one called in, as you know, and I wasn't sure, as usual, who was out there. Well, it turns out that last week's show is one of our highest rated live audience we've had. And it's projected that within 30 days of that show, once it hits the archives, it's already there, of course, that we could possibly have over 1,000 visitors to that show from the archives in the first 30 days of the show being in the archives. And for a year, they don't even know what the projection could be. That blew me away, because it's a hot button issue, race. And as I've said many, many, many times, it's not a subject that people are comfortable talking about or being around said conversation, et cetera. So I was extremely surprised by that. And today's subject also has something to do about race. So we're sort of like keeping with that same vein, but we're here. Okay, today's show. The title of today's show, and I play with this, but I didn't think anybody would appreciate it, but the title of today's show could be easily called "From the Donald to the President." Remember when one of his ex-wives said she used to call him the Donald, and a lot of people would refer to him as the Donald? Now, we have "From the Donald to the President." Only in America would have been that title. So that's why I put it in the tag on our promotion, that this was a show that I never thought we would do. I truly thought that, on the one hand, Clinton was going to win. You know, I haven't voted for president or anything like that in decades, and I didn't do it this time either. But at the same time, there was this gut feeling, this little message at the back of my head saying, Trump is going to win. Trump is going to win. And the reason he's going to win is that he is tapping into part of our paradigm that I talk about here on the War Report, and that is, we know it starts with awareness and it leads to critical awareness, then that takes you over into understanding, then developing critical understanding. But I have always said it was the third component that was the most critical component. Critical engagement. Critical emotion. I think I stated it as critical emotional engagement. That is what I saw, the little that I paid attention to, the months of campaigning, et cetera, was that Trump, the showman, Trump, the flamboyant, outrageous, whatever you want to call him, was tapping into the critical emotional engagement of people who were going to come out and vote for him. And when you reach that critical mass of people and you get them emotionally engaged in whatever it is you're talking about, whatever you are asking them to do, that is the key. And I saw Trump doing that, whereas Clinton wasn't doing it. And so that little voice was saying, yep, he's a clown, he's this, that, and the other, but he's going to win, and it's going to be for that reason. Now, this show is not on Trump and the election and the aftermath per se. It is about the potential aftermath. But I'm trying to limit this show to our community, the education community. And it's with that in mind that my title was Trump and the neoliberal agenda, Machiavellian agenda, and education and beyond, but mostly education. What does electing Donald Trump potentially mean for public education today and going forward? Think about this. Ever since we've had public education, and I've said this in the past, especially when it became public education and when it became the law that the state would have to provide education at the public's expense. Back in Horace Mann's day, there were always business people who wanted a seat at the table. And I've talked about this in the past as well. They had a minority voice, and most of the time their voice was never heard or acted upon, but they didn't go away. They wanted a seat at the table. They wanted to have say-so in what the purpose of public education was going to be about, how we were going to go about educating people, and then what was going to be the end result of having these people, young people, educated for coming into the workforce. They, as I said, they never went away. And now we can see through history what it has meant when business was sitting at the table. Let me go back just maybe 40, 50 years ago. Lyndon Johnson, you remember him, the Great Society guy. He gave us ESEA. You remember that? We've talked about it. Elementary Secondary Education Act. He saw, before that, if I'm right, from Johnson coming up to where we are today, Johnson was the only president that was a teacher. Wasn't he a teacher in Texas? Those of you out there who are historians and maybe know more about that than I do, let me know. Well, I'm pretty sure he was a teacher. But anyway, my point is that if I'm right, He was the only person to sit in the White House who was actually a teacher. Obama, yeah, he said he was a teacher at University of Chicago teaching constitutional law part-time. I don't count him with that. So anyway, President Johnson gave us Elementary Secondary Education Act. And what that act was all about was that Johnson recognized and was willing to take a position on it as part of his War on Poverty program, that education played a significant potential part in maintaining, perpetuating, or eradicating poverty. We know, and he knew, that there was a huge relationship between poverty and educational access and achievement. Moving forward, Reagan gave us A Nation at Risk. As you recall, Reagan promised that he would eliminate, Jimmy Carter gave us the education department, making education a departmental level status, whereas previously under Johnson and others, education was part of HUD, H-U-D, Housing Urban Development Corporation, or department when it was elevated department, but education was just a part. And it was Carter who pulled it out of that configuration and gave it cabinet level status. But back to Reagan. Reagan wanted to eliminate the Department of Education. It's part of his platform, part of his promise. So when he gets in office, what does he do? He commissioned this study with the purpose of providing him ammunition to justify eliminating the Department of Education. And we know what came out of that was A Nation at Risk. So we got that from that president. And it said Carter made it a cabinet level department. Bush won, wanted to make education where, to some extent, where we are today in terms of making it more, quote, efficient and making it more relevant to the future by way of privatizing education, by way of implementing what we see now in the form of high-stakes testing standards and et cetera. He wanted to be known as the education president. That's Bush 1. Clinton. Well, I had down here Clinton 1, but we don't need that since we won't have a Clinton 2. Clinton picked up that mantle from Bush 1, and he too set out to, quote, become an education president. And it was Bill Clinton that really got the ball rolling in terms of the neoliberal impact on shaping public education and its move, its march towards privatizing public education. That's what we got for Bill Clinton, basically a continuation of Bush's one vision for education. Bush 2, you know what Bush 2 gave us. No Child Left Behind, which I have characterized as the formal declaration of war on public education, teachers, unions, and the effort to achieve total privatization of public education and the destruction of public education as we know it in order to get there. Then we have Obama, who gave us Race to the Top, which was putting No Child Left Behind on steroids. and we know what his agenda was. We're still living through it, and how he went about it, etc. Now we have a President Trump. What do you think his contribution is going to be in this long line of former presidents and their vision of public education, their policies, and the impact of those policies? I know people across the country, especially those who voted for Hillary, are distraught. I know there was a huge wave of disbelief, depression, stress, maybe even post-traumatic stress in some cases, and visions of what was going to happen to public education, what was going to happen to the teachers, what's going to happen to the students, what's going to happen to the schools and the communities, and on and on. So, and it's hard to say with precision, and at this point, we can only look at, quote, what we know about the Donald, what the Donald said on his campaign swings, but we can also look at the, and this is important, I think, really important, is look at his transition team. Who are the members on his transition team? Where do they come from? What's their background? What's their ideology, and et cetera? I think that will give us, for right now, today, a fairly accurate view of what is to come. And by that, then, who will be his Secretary of Education? And given Trump's history, what is all going to mean going forward? So start with Donald Trump. We know, quote, he's a businessman. That's his thing. He says he's ruthless, he's relentless, he's a go-getter. He says he's successful. He had many, many bankruptcies, but he says he's successful. He is a businessman. What does that suggest? The business model that Bush won, Bush two, Clinton, Obama, have been pushing. Is it most likely what Donald Trump is going to push? That's his claim to fame, is business. Also, didn't Donald Trump have a Trump University? Private, for-profit university? What does that suggest going forward? Now, when we start thinking about this, we can pull back from the emotion and the fear and all that goes with that. Let's start looking at what could possibly be affected by Donald Trump. Now, remember, this guy is going to, January 2017, he's going to become the President of the United States. He's going to put his cabinet in place. He's a Republican, got a Republican Senate, he has a Republican Congress, and he's going to put a Republican as a fifth seat on the Supreme Court. What can this man do? He can do a hell of a lot. Let's look at some of the areas. Oh, before we go there, there was reports all across the country that students in elementary, middle school, high school, colleges, white students are bullying, taunting, seeking to humiliate students of colors, and particularly, of course, Latinos or Hispanics, depending on what part of the country you're from, openly and without fear of retribution. That is one of the things that we can see immediately, that Trump and his rhetoric and the promises that he made as relates to immigrants, as relates to the poor, as relates to dog whistle blowing about race, he has already emboldened large element of the population with the belief that they can do these things with immunity because of Trump. Is this a further implication that this is just the tip of the iceberg in terms of the open hostility being carried out against all those people that Trump identified as dregs on society? That's one of the first things that we can see that right now. We can also see the people who are marching across the country shouting, "Not my president," but he is going to be your president. And so, now, with education, to start with, what is Trump going to do about the most important thing, probably, I won't say most important thing, because that's relative to one's perspective, but a very important thing, local control of education. We've seen over the last, especially the last 10 to 15 years, that the neoliberals, be a Republican, Democrat, the millionaires, the billionaires, multinational corporation, putting millions, tens of millions nationally in trying to control school board elections, thus trying to control local schools. What is Trump going to do there? What do you think Trump is going to do there? Is he going to support, or is he going to seek to have those who are trying to take over the local control from the local citizens and putting the control of local schools in the hands of elected puppets by the neoliberals, thus transferring control from the local citizenry through a democratic process into control by an oligarchy? What do you think he's going to do in that area? And remember, now we say this, and this may be just a slogan, that local control of schools is one of the remaining democratic institutions that we have, in that the local citizenry or community controls that's the schools, when I say school, school district, and that the curriculum, the personnel, and et cetera, are all in place via a democratic process. And when that process is corrupt and is taken over by the neoliberals, the oligarchy, that is a blow against one of our remaining democratic institutions. Where is he going to come on that? Charter schools. We already know, like Hillary Clinton, he's a charter school proponent. Is he going to, like Obama, support charter schools in terms of the putting in of billions, tens of billions of dollars into the charter campaign? Is he going to, even though I don't want to get ahead of myself here, we know that supposedly now federal government's role in education has been cut back and the states are going to have more control like past decades, but yet and still the president can still have a major impact here. So is he going to go like Bush and Obama and pushing charter schools? Or is he going to go like the public did in Massachusetts and in Georgia when they said no in Massachusetts to raising the cap on public schools? And they said in Georgia, no to turning the schools over to the governor, like so many states have done so far. What is he going to do? And let's take a look at vouchers. Vouchers are not as big as they once were and like some people would want them to be. But is he going to support vouchers, or is he going to remain silent in those, for those areas of the country where governors and mayors and school boards are pushing voucher program? We don't know. What about community schools? Sort of like alluded to this before. But community schools are democratic and owned by and controlled by the community. Is he going to push community schooling? I think you know where I would come down in terms of what I think, but I'll sort of like hold that back. Maybe I've just given it away all again, but what is he going to do there? Another crucial area is attack on teachers and supporting alternative certification of teachers, like Teach for America, like Relay. Is he going to push or support those programs which are a direct attack on the professionalization of American teachers? What do you think? Because, of course, what we're talking about here is, will we still have a professionally trained workforce of teachers? Or will we have a situation where in Wisconsin and other places they were saying just about anyone can be a teacher? If you have, as long as you don't have a criminal record, particularly as a pedophile, but if you have experience in a job where mathematics was a prominent feature of you performing your work, knowledge and mastery of mathematics, then you are okay to come in and teach math in public schools in that state, in that district. Is he going to go that route? So what do you think? Again, you know, if you call in, that would be helpful, but if not, what are you thinking there? What is the Donald going to do? And oh, by the way, am I being disrespectful when I continue to call him the Donald? I like the title, so I will probably continue doing it. But now, here's another area that's very, very, very hot at the moment. That is the, and it's related to the two shows we did previous to this one and the two that we're going to do subsequent. And that is this area of cultural diversity and competency. There's across the country, as I've said previously, there is an awareness now. There is, quote, an understanding. There's definitely emotional engagement in this question of especially urban teachers who teach the majority of the student population in this country. The majority of those teachers are white teachers. And the question of whether or not they bring into their classroom, into their school, cultural, racial biases. And there's an effort both at universities to develop courses and degree emphasis at the master's level to better prepare teachers to be aware of and deal with their cultural biases before they step into the classroom. There are programs now for professional development in school districts for teachers who are already employed as public school teachers. And this movement, I'm going to call it a movement for now, was growing. What do you think under a President Trump, this kind of program, what would happen to this type of program? I know for, I won't say for a fact, but in looking at social media in the last few days and looking at reactions all across the country, and of course you have been doing too, and you know that people, as I said earlier, are so depressed and so distraught and on and on. One of the things that I saw in several black parents and teachers raising this question about cultural diversity, cultural competency, proficiency of their teachers. One such parent, a woman, raised the question of why so many white people voted for Trump. What does this really mean? She was frightened over the fact that so many white people voted for Trump. And I think what she was saying was, are we in a time in this country where supposedly this was post-racial America? And I think she was alluding to, no, we're not, and we never have been. And Obama getting elected did not signal we were into a period of post-racial America and that white racism was alive and well as she looked at and interpreted the white votes, the demographics of the white vote that led to Trump's being elected. Piggybacking on that, another teacher and parent, a male, African-American, was saying that he was distraught over the same phenomenon, but he took it further, and so did a third woman, African-American. He said, how many of my colleagues, my white colleagues, voted for Trump? How many of my colleagues am I going to look at and feel that they were a Trump supporter? And how do they feel really about me as their colleague? The third one that I mentioned, hers was, how many of these white Trump supporters who our teachers will be going into our classrooms and have been in our classroom teaching our children? And what are they teaching our children? So this issue came up, and of course you know it would, across the internet. And of course I was very sensitive to it, and I tried to keep track of that part of what people are feeling and thinking about a Trump win. Further, and this was something that really just recently came to my attention, a decent group of teachers who are saying that Trump presidency, and these are teachers, folks, so bad, him being elected, that he's going to come after teachers. And they were actually talking about, and I'm even hesitant to say this, and I'm not mocking this, but what they were saying was developing plans as to how to leave America. Almost like a rediscovery of the Underground Railroad. How to get out of America to another country that will not be like Trump America. So you can see when I asked the question of what is going to be Donald Trump's real neoliberal Machiavellian agenda on public education. Some of us may think we know because, again, what Trump has said, and we know his history as a businessman and his disrespect for women, his mocking of minorities, and his allegiance to the business philosophy that it put owners against employees and the treatment of employees as a result. Now this man is going to be sitting in the White House. He's going to be on Pennsylvania Avenue. And he's made many, many promises. Some of it we'd like to think that it was just campaign rhetoric. Some of it he probably means, and if any way possible, he plans to act upon. And so if we take any one of the areas that I mentioned, and I didn't mention everything, but we'll take the local control, we take the charter schools, take the vouchers, take community schooling, we take the professional training of requiring the professional training of teachers, and the cultural diversity issue. And one last thing, which basically summarizes everything, at least for me, the for-profit educational institution, and particularly at the university level, which Trump had, Trump University. You take any and all of these together, what do you think is going to happen over the next 2 to 4 years to American public education? I know you have thoughts, feelings, concerns. You probably run the gamut all the way up to historical, and thinking about what this man can and will do. If you're out there, give me a call and share what you think. But continuing, let's tie this back to the neoliberal Machiavellian agenda. Recall what one of the first principles is that, and Reagan really pushed this on us, the notion of small government, the notion of reducing government, the notion of basically taking the government out of the humanitarian mission of caring about its citizens, the poor, the sick, the elderly, education, the whole nine yards. That is one of the principles, one of the first principles, is that the role of the government is to enhance the business corporate elite and their agenda by any means necessary, legislation, judicial decision, and if necessary, military force. That's the first principle, one of the first principles of the neoliberal agenda. And make no mistake, folks, Trump is a neoliberal. When he was a Republican, when he was a Democrat, back to being a Republican, back to being a Democrat, he remained a neoliberal. On the campaign trail, he exhibited those credentials about the role of the government. That's one principle. Two, the principle of what many have come to call putting profit over people, that is a salient principle of the neoliberal agenda. And in doing so, there is no real consideration about the harm that may result as a result of putting profit over people. Apply that to Social Security, apply that to school funding, apply that to Medicare, apply it to that portion of, I think probably the Medicare, where children are given special dispensation in terms of access to medical care. And of course, aid to dependent children in terms of housing consideration and the other range of services. This is neoliberal agenda that we're talking about, and neoliberal agenda as it has unfolded since the Reagan years, in the last 35 years. Think about some of the other things that I've talked about here on the War Report as relates to the neoliberal agenda. If he is really a neoliberal, if he means all the things that he's been talking about and he's noted for, what does all of it mean as relates to public education? More specifically, let's take the area of funding for public education. Will he seek to cut back on funding at the federal level? Will he seek to increase it? I could almost get that out because I don't believe that. Will he put additional strains on how federal funding of public education can be handled? And I can keep going on that area, but these are the things that if you understand the neoliberal agenda, as I've laid it out, if you understand Trump as he has been and as he promises to be, and if you take into consideration, as I said before, he has the Senate, the Republican Senate, House, and soon probably the Supreme Court. He has the vast majority of the 50 governors are Republicans. I don't know how many mayors and now school boards. I don't know. I'm trying to get over the idea of this man could have an unfettered path to either further the process of destroying public education, and will he take it? What do we know about him that gives us a clue to what he will most likely do? And keep in mind, basically what I'm talking about is what this show is all about, the privatization of public education. Where will Trump come down on the war on public education, the war to privatize public education? Question I put to you, and I'm sure You've been thinking about it, since most of the audience are teachers, and I would imagine most of the audience is female. And if you're retired, or if you're active, or if you're going into public education, you have to be thinking about these questions and the issues that underline the questions. I want to repeat something again. Ever since we've had public education, business has wanted to have a seat at the table. Now, with Trump, business, they don't want a seat at the table because now they own the table. They owned it to some extent under Obama, Bush 1, Clinton. But now the ownership, I think, is complete. That's progress for them and a setback for us. So one other thing is we're now approaching almost the limits of my time. I want to go back to what we've seen so far again among students at elementary, junior high, high school, and college level. In Berkeley, California, Phoenix, Arizona, Boulder, Colorado, Seattle, and other communities, we've seen young children who probably don't know what the hell they're saying when they were saying, you know, build the wall. Build the wall. And they're saying other racial slurs and the effigy hanging black figures with ropes around their necks, setting fires to images of minorities, things that have happened in horrendously for the 400-year history of this country. What I'm raising here is, if these kids don't know what they're really doing at 5, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12, where did they get it from? Where did they get this, I won't say hatred, but I guess maybe that's the adequate word for it now. Where did they get it from? And what made them feel that they could bring it into their schools and conduct such behavior with immunity? Now, of course, everybody's saying that it was, and I'm alluding to that it was Trump, and they feel emboldened by it. But also, it goes back to what we had talked about for the last 2 weeks prior to today's show, in terms of the socialization, the acculturation that we all undergo in any society, and the role of the home, the parents, the community, the church, the school, the media now, and et cetera. I didn't vote because I don't believe in the principle of the lesser of two evils, when both of them are evil. But it is still, for me, the most crucial thing that we should be looking at, is that the school as a major socialization, the major socialization agent now in our society, it's supposedly a place of democracy. It's supposed to be a place where equality, social justice, economic justice is present, the recognition of and a conveyance of said values as democratic values. And yet and still we see the behavior that is taking place across the country in the last few days. What does it say about our socialization, our acculturation processes, both in the community as as well as in the schools. This, to me, is the most frightening part. Well, for me, and I'm speaking now, me, is that Trump will elect or appoint the next Supreme Court justice, and in my lifetime, wherever length that is, I will never see a Warren court like we had under Supreme Court Justice Earl Warren. Even we won't have any, a moderate Supreme Court that practiced law as opposed to politics. That, to me, was the most devastating for me. Secondly is what I just described in terms of what we see taking place in our schools and what it may mean going forward for the next 4 years and beyond. I can go on and on and on about that portion, but this is something that as teachers, as parents, we have to be extremely emotionally aware of and hopefully do something about. So we are getting to the end of my time, and I don't know what you're thinking. I'm guessing, of course, what you think, but I don't know what you're thinking specifically. I will look at the social media to see what you guys are saying and the response to today's show. And if there's anything like the last 2 weeks, the responses will be mixed. There are people who call me a racist. There are people who call the show racist. There were people who thought it was the best show ever and congratulated me for being the person who would raise the issue, have the conversation, and it was courageous, and et cetera. This show, I don't know. We'll see. So with that, folks, I am going to bid adieu because my time is up, and I'll see you next week. Have a good rest of your Sunday.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.